Good evening. Happy Thursday. I'm Molly McAllister.
And I'm Spencer Williams, and this is All Access Pass. And here is Dalla with Life on Earth.
Trying to paint a masterpiece, but I've been coloring all the wrong things. We all fall down and skin our knees. Just keep running, let it bleed, 'cause you're all
welcome back to All Access Pass. That was Dalla with Life on Earth. So before we get going on the content of this night's show, we can't really fail to mention that today is the UN-organized International Day of Persons with Disabilities. It's super big deal, and it's super, super relevant to what we're trying to do with our radio collective. Just to give some context, I can cover some of the basics of what International Day of Persons with Disabilities is. So this day has been commemorated since 1992 by the United Nations, and it aims to create awareness and mobilize support for critical issues relating to the inclusion of persons with disabilities in society and development. The day works to promote action to raise awareness about disability issues and draws attention to the benefits of an inclusive and accessible society. The theme for this year's day, as stated on the UN website, is Inclusion Matters, Access and Empowerment for People of All Abilities. So, to reiterate why this matters and why you should care about it, all our listeners, is some statistics for you. So, worldwide, there's an estimated 1 billion people living with disabilities. That's almost 1 in 7 people on the entire planet. 1 billion. And these people very often face barriers to inclusion in key aspects of society. As a result, oftentimes people with disabilities can't enjoy access to society on an equal basis with others. That includes things like access to transportation, employment, education, and social and political participation. The right to access and participation is so essential in creating stable democracies, active citizenship, and reducing inequalities in society. And people of all abilities must be able to fulfill their role in society and participate on an equal basis with others. Unfortunately, and to mine, and I'm pretty sure Spencer's, great dismay, the societal image of persons with disabilities is often impacted by attitudes founded on stigma and discrimination, and sometimes even archaic ideas about what disabilities are. These are often the greatest barriers of all for people to access the full and equal participation in society on an equal basis. So a lot of times it's not the physical barriers, but it's literally people's attitudes that's blocking equal access. These are all things we're really trying to address on All Access Pass, and they give reason to why this collective was even started at CITR in the first place. So as we proceed with the rest of tonight's show, keeping in mind the significance of today's date and the importance of the message promoted by the International Day of Persons with Disabilities, I will shamelessly quote my favorite female politician, Elizabeth May, when she gave a talk at UBC about 2.5 weeks ago. And one of the lines she finished off her talk was, change takes courage. And although it's sometimes really daunting, that's exactly what we're trying to do with our radio collective and our radio show. And it's why we're sharing our voices over the radio waves with you tonight and every Thursday. So we're here to create meaningful and long-lasting change and be courageous in all of our efforts to do so. And we thank you guys for listening, because just by tuning in, you're also becoming part of the journey for change. Bouncing off of that onto a less serious note, we'll kick it off with a song by called Boxcars by Billy the Kid.
I drove out to the old state line. I was waiting.
That was Billy the Kid with Boxcars. Welcome back to All Access Pass. You're listening to CITR 101.9. So last week, Spencer and I had the opportunity to attend a panel series that was also called, coincidentally, All Access Pass. Pass standing for Promoting Accessible and Safe Spaces. It was co-presented by Blueprint and Goodnight Out Vancouver, and it took place at Venue Nightclub. The speakers on the panel included Arnold Cheng, who is an ambassador from the Rick Hansen Foundation, Lucas from Community, Rachel Sullivan, who is from the Equity and Inclusion Office here at UBC, and Melanie Matening from Denim Vest and Hardwood Cafe. The panel series was created to provide a forum to address accessibility, diversity, and gender terminology and conversations in the Vancouver nightlife industry. And we're going to share some audio clips that we took at the event with you. So we're going to start off with one where the panel speakers are talking about venue accessibility in Vancouver. We hope you enjoy.
Next question is for Lucas, but again, after Lucas answers, to chime in. What are some concrete ways in which an organization or a venue or a space can work towards supporting a safe space for LGBTQ patrons? So specific tangible skills or things.
My favorite specific tangible, I think we were having a conversation about tangibility of stuff earlier, so this is really timely. But it's also on the question list, so I knew to have time. So I think one really specific tangible thing that any space can really do is about visibility. So I think you were mentioning earlier, if you don't see yourself in a space or people like you reflected in that space, it's not going to seem like you belong there, right? Because literally, like, you may not see people like you in the direct space, but also, like, how are the walls decorated? Who's in the advertisements? If there are people in advertisements, is it a stereotypical depiction? Is it perpetuating some sort of biases or misinformation? What do you have in your space that will let me see myself in your space or anyone else see themselves in that space? Because often when we come to bars, clubs, actually, you know, any space in general, there's often a theme because there's often an audience, right? But people from all walks of life, people from all sorts of identities will access a space, right? Just because it's a club meant for X type of people doesn't mean it's only that type of person who's going to come to that club. And also that type of person might also have other identities as well. So if, for example, if you have a club that caters to lesbian and gay folks, great, but is it mostly white people doing the advertisement for the space, right? Because that's going to lock out a whole lot of people. So I think one really concrete thing you can do is to think about visibility, who you're representing, and if you're not representing people, question why that is, and also raise that question, well, why don't we do more to represent more diverse people in their spaces, and not just tokenizing it, right? So that means, like, representation, but also the follow-through of, like, let's think about, like, our staff, who we have on our staff. How can we engage with communities in a meaningful way instead of just putting, like, here's our token gay person on our poster every time? Because there's a lot of follow-up that needs to happen after that.
Phyllis, question is for you. What are the main barriers in a business becoming more accessible? And how can venues better advertise that they are safe and accessible spaces?
Okay. Can you give
the first part of that again? Yeah. So what are some of the main barriers in a business becoming more accessible?
successful and have a venue or party advertised that they're a safe and accessible space.
Yeah, so I think that the way in which the event gets framed, even in the advertising, where the event is being held, people might just say Vancouver, but talking also about, almost on Jose Lish land, that tells me also that, so the folks hosting are maybe a little bit more aware. Okay, that's good. And it brings some awareness to the framing of the event. And then I'm thinking also of issues around safety. So, safe for who, safe when, and really thinking about issues of safety, it's complex because safety means different things to different people. And so how can one event or one space or one venue really address those issues, right? And it is, I think, going back to the communities that the event is trying to engage with is a good place to start. We could easily talk about sexual harassment, we could talk about racism, sexism, ableism, homophobia, transphobia, but that doesn't speak for all of the kinds of safety, not safety, that people might feel. So how do we make spaces safer? I think by engaging in those conversations, it's going to be a theme that kind of runs through a lot of what we're saying, but engaging in different conversations, thinking about the different kinds of experiences people might be having, and asking about for more information on those experiences, it's important to do the follow-up stuff. I'm going to echo this here. And say that it's not just about, so my favorite thing is when a venue has a rainbow flag. Okay, all right. But if the staff sees something or they do something that's not kind of LGBTQ friendly, then I'm like, oh, that sticker on the outside, which will be, hey, we've thought about this enough to put a sticker on, that then makes me question, what's happening here. So that's kind of just an example, And then, of course, there's the patrons. What if something happens between patrons? How does that get handled? And I think that these are some of the kind of serious questions that we have an opportunity to address here.
Yeah, totally. And I'm going to put on my Hartwood hat instead of my Denim Vest hat, because I think it's different too when you're coming in as an organization or as organizers, as opposed to being someone who works in a business or maybe owns a business, because I think the reality is that it is really, really hard sometimes, as I was saying, to be accessible in a place where the traditional business model totally does not allow that at all. It's so hard. It's really, really hard. And also the infrastructure of the city, for the most part, makes it really hard for us to be physically accessible, financially accessible, emotionally accessible. The cafe is based on talking about welcomeness and belonging, but at the same time, we're confronted with the idea of financial sustainability, which makes it hard because capitalism really does make it hard. but at the same time, understanding that, again, with responsibilities and also the reality is that we are implicated in capitalism, but what's a way that we can kind of shift what we already have and turn these traditional business models into a way where we can actually integrate it? And I think that with that, it's really important to for businesses to connect with other organizations and other businesses, and maybe even like business bureaus and stuff like that, to really find out who are the allies out there that are able to work together, because it is a really, really isolated community, I think, out there for business people, entrepreneurs, everyone who are wanting to create shifts, but aren't finding other folks that are able to do it, or sometimes don't have the funding to be able to do it. And I know that one of the biggest things that happens, I think, with organizing is burnout. That happens when isolation exists in your life and you're not able to see the changes that you're trying to create. So I think that, seeking out those folks that are already doing similar work is really important. and really understanding the realities of it too. As you were saying, there's a difference between being wheelchair accessible and wheelchair friendly. And being real with it, being like, hey, we're not accessible, I'm sorry. And then how can we have a bigger conversation? Let's ally or like talk to folks who have those experiences and figure out ways, you know, not just assuming.
It's funny you mentioned something about capitalism and whatnot too, because from my community, the disability community, I find that for businesses that are actually taking measures and actually, you know, following through with them, they tend to get a lot of word of mouth in the community, and the people who go there, they do come back. And that's really like when people think about it, not as a business expense, but as an investment, that's when things start changing big time.
One more thing. we do this thing both at Harvard and at Invest to talk about the costs of inaccessibility for both places, and to talk about how we are actually losing profit as a result of not being accessible because of the people that we're not serving that we could be serving. So, and like maybe one way to turn that around, because people are like, the cost in inaccessibility is the profitability of accessibility. it really does. It really does affect the ways in which, you know, like you can hold retention and like keep people coming. Because when people see that you're actually wanting to do that, they're going to be like, cool, I want to come here all the time, I want to get my friends to come here all the time. And then that builds relationships, and people just want to visit forever and give you money. And again, capitalism is weird, but I really do believe in revolutionary money laundering.
That was a clip from Safe Spaces at Venue last Tuesday. Here is Little Big Adventure with Happiest Times.
Such a long time ago, and I won't forget anything you said. Oh no, oh no. You two should settle down and have the happiest time of your lives. And I will try to keep myself alive, alive. My stomach hurts and my head hurts.
So next up for you, we have another audio clip from the event that Spencer and I went to last week. This one is about wheelchair accessibility, so hope you enjoy.
So now we're going to single you guys out, and Arnold, this question is for you. So if a patron arrives at a venue and it is not accessible, what is the most respectful way to navigate this situation?
That's a very, very good question, actually. Sometimes it depends on the venue itself. Like, sometimes the venue is, quote unquote, not accessible, but there are ways around it. So I know I have it easier because I have a manual chair, not a really heavy power chair. So this guy probably weighs like 20 pounds. So if you add me on top, it's probably like 1,020,000 total. So yeah, like sometimes if it's only one step, like you can make it work. But sometimes if it's a flight of stairs, it's not really a whole lot you can do, especially if it's a really old building. But I think the most respectful way is basically, you know, make sure that you are showing that you're aware of the issue. So there's an example. There's a restaurant. I'm not going to name which one it is, but it is in Gastown. And Gastown is known for cobblestones and hipsters, and also in accessibility. So the place has a ramp at the back, and it is really, really steep. It's like 45-degree angle steep. It's not meant for wheelchairs. It's meant for, you know, beer, which is pretty cool. And it was, they tried to get me in, and they couldn't because it was just too steep. But at the same time, they told me, like, yeah, we're aware of it. We've talked to the city. We've done this. We've done that. And of course, you know, hopefully you're not lying about that. But as long as you're not lying about it, I think, like, just showing that you're aware of it and you're making an effort, that's probably the key. Because if you are not aware of it and you're not making an effort, then nothing's going to change.
Awesome. Thank you. I kind of have a remote answer to this question. This week I was fortunate to chat with a gentleman named Mike Fraser. If anyone here is kind of into the electronic music scene in Vancouver, he performs under the DJ name Take Five, and he's a DJ who uses a wheelchair. And he really wanted to be able to get across that being wheelchair accessible and being wheelchair friendly are two very different things. And one thing that he said, that if he could have venue, like, spaces, if they could ask themselves, what have I done to ensure that disabled people can enjoy the space as it was intended for use by able-bodied people? So if we think about a venue, a live music or a DJ or a dance event, it's one thing to be able to get in the door, right? But can we be social? Can we move around? Can we dance in this space? It's more than just getting through the door. And I have some other tidbits from him to share throughout the evening, because shout out to Take Five.
I just want to add something to that as well. You're totally right about that, because sometimes people say, well, aren't there laws, like bylaws around accessibility? And yeah, there are, but sometimes there's something I like to call the erosion of access. So you might have an accessible washer, but if you use it for storage, well, first of all, I'm going to get mad at you. But secondly, like, that pretty much eliminates the whole, or defeats the whole purpose. So I think a lot of it is not just having the access, but how you treat the access as well, without me yelling at you.
That was one of his as well. Accessible washrooms are not storage closets. Sorry. Yeah. All right. Next question.
Here's a song by Burning Borders. This one is called Beauty School Dropout.
As days grew dark, she touched her face to see. When she awakes, her life was never meant to be. A beautiful life was all this queen ever seeked. She hides a prize, she hopes in time her life would turn out right. Trust her to make it. She left her.
change. And everything she does, it seems to always stay the same. Just the memory of what could be, it's everything that passed. Now she's old, her life is done, her life has gone too fast.
From the UBC Food Society.
Yummy!
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com. Or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety. Or you can even join our Facebook group.
Well, how do you like it? There's only one word for it.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts@citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
Welcome back. This is a clip from the talk we went to last Tuesday. It talked about patrons versus performers. Often when I go to venues, the venue may be accessible for patrons to get into, but most often it's not accessible for all performers. So if the performer has a disability, if they wanted to perform at venue, they couldn't because the stage is too steep. Anyway, here's the clip.
Okay, so the next one, I think maybe Arnold and I will share. I'll start, just to give the audience a bit of backstory behind this. So the question is wondering, kind of the obvious, why is this discussion about accessibility taking place in a venue where the stage isn't accessible? So there's a few things to unpack here. One, it's very hard to find an accessible venue in Vancouver for the size of audience we want to have. We went through, you know, Fortune, we love Fortune, but we've got that massive staircase. They don't, I don't think there's a neutral washroom. There could have been, maybe. So it's like our wish list of venues, spaces to be in, which one had the most. This one too, because we have to think like it's a Tuesday, so central to transit, although I know transit failed a lot of you today. There's just so many factors into how we would pick. So we picked this one, and we did realize before planning that the stage was not accessible. So this brings up 2 points. One, how do we communicate that with our guests? And I'll let him speak to that. But also, as Take Five and I chatted about, there are entertainers, there are performers who use mobility aids, and do we even factor them into that? We often think of places being accessible for patrons, but what about the people on the stage as well? And so yeah, I'll pass it off to you now, kind of finish this train of thought.
Sure, so I see this as like an extension of what a lot of people think already, like, were we talking about attitudes? Yeah, we were talking about attitudes, right? So yeah, there's some attitudes that still need to shift a little. And I think one of them is the idea that people who have mobility challenges might always be the consumer and not always be the provider of a service or product or whatever. Because, here's another example, very similar to this. UBC. Oh, should I name a venue? Anyways, well, I think people can. Yeah, well, a building at UBC. They got renovated very recently, within the past 5 years. And it was a renovation of an older building, and they made it very, very accessible in many ways, except for one, is that the accessible seats were at the very back, at the top of the lecture hall, and whoever's doing the lecturing, the professor, whatever, there's no step-free access to that. So if you were a professor at UBC, you would not be able to give your lesson like everyone else. You would have to bump your way down the stairs and then go back up, which some people can do and some people can't. I actually know this person, she's also in a chair, and she had to give a presentation at one of those buildings, and she was kind of surprised because it was so new that you could smell the wood, like you could still smell it. It has a new place smell, kind of like a new car smell, but a new place smell. And I think it's just the idea that people with disabilities should be able to become the presenter if they need to be. Imagine if you were a student, you had to give a presentation as part of the class. Are you going to give a presentation from the back of the room? I mean, it'll kind of look cool because you're going to be talking down to your audience and be like, haha, powerful. But besides that, there's not a whole lot of advantage to that. So I think most of it's just changing our way of thinking. And in turn, that will also change how we plan venues, like with venue. And of course, there's also another issue here that I see is that ramps are usually pretty long. And I'm not sure where they would build such a long ramp here as well. So sometimes it's also structural, like here.
Thank you. And again, bringing it back to the gentleman I spoke with, he brought up the really good point that I'm going to use a name here because it's a positive thing. I did ask him if, as a performer, there were any spaces in town that he felt good at and he had positive experience, and he said by far the best place that he plays is Fortune Sound Club with that staircase. He says the staff are always like really receptive and help him negotiate. But he brings up the point that he told me I can share all this. He chooses to get carried up the stairs, but he goes down the stairs himself. He insists that he goes back down, gets himself down the stairs. I don't know if any of you have been to the Fortune, but it's quite the set of stairs there. And his point in wanting me to share this is that as spaces or as people who manage spaces, he says, do not allow yourself to dictate how disabled people navigate the space, even if this means that you think it's unsafe. And I think that's something really important to keep in mind, is that we may make spaces what we seem safe or accessible, but it's still, people's autonomy is really important, and how they choose to navigate that space is really important as well.
Okay, that was the end of our patron versus performer clip, and it's super relevant because, as Arnold talked about in the clip, that is something that we find at UBC as well, where there's lecture halls and classrooms where students who might be in wheelchairs can get in, but a professor isn't able to speak to the class from the front stage or the front area. So there's a lot of irony that still goes on, and it's kind of one of those things that matches up with a phrase that was said earlier in one of the clips about how accessibility doesn't really mean anything if you don't fully understand it. So you have to understand it first before you claim that a space is accessible, and then you can really make it accessible for everybody, and that's what matters. So up next is a song by Frank Turner. This is called Glorious You.
Sunlit uplands around the river bend.
That was Glorious You by Frank Turner. Up next, we have another audio clip from the event last week, the panel series. This is just a short one, and this is the panelists talking about what happens and what you should do as a venue if you're called out about being inaccessible.
So you touched on this, definitely, but like that feeling of being called out and like the response that Den and Vest had when you folks were called out to respond to that, wanting to follow up and learn more. And also, I think both of you touched on owning that. So like the space isn't accessible, saying like, yes, it's not. How can we work on that? Like you called out for certain things, like, yes, that's going on. How can we work on this, right? Because I think that anarchists, I were brought up to believe you make a mistake, you are a bad person. If somebody's telling you you've done wrong, you are bad, and that's not what that means. If somebody's telling you you made a mistake, it's actually a good thing, because that's providing an opportunity for you to grow and learn. It's not saying you're a bad person. It's just saying that that thing that happened was bad or caused harm. But it doesn't mean you're bad, it doesn't mean you're like not bad for the rest of your life, right? It's an opportunity, it's not something that's gonna like wreck the rest of your life or should make you feel terrible, even though like at first it will. But that's how learning happens, right? Like learning happens only when we're challenged by things. So I think it's something important.
And I feel like when people call you out, it's because they assume better from you. So it's actually kind of like, I'm gonna call you out because thought that maybe you, and also I want to keep you in the community, otherwise I would just be like, no, see ya. You know, so I think that there's a sense of community to it, and there's also a way to kind of shift that and call it calling in, which is something that's been happening a lot, I think, in a lot of organized communities that I've been with. And again, language is very important, so shift that.
All right, time for another song. Here is Love Takes by Connor Roth.
Well, there's a four-letter word, it's overly inscribed. I keep doubting you, what have I felt you inside? Constant thoughts of you are always on my mind. Thoughts I can't describe. An illusion created by streams of consciousness. You claim to bring people joy and happiness. Well, I'd say otherwise. You play with the strings of my heart this hour. Not forget you, objectified it like a marionette. You have caused me hate for feelings I can't reinstate. Well, this is all that love takes. I suppose you're nothing more than a survival strategy. Your highs and lows help to maintain a person's sanity. Regretfully, I still need you by my side. My ignorance was bliss until the truth was shown to me. I put my trust into you wholeheartedly, but you're nothing but a lie. Away. Well, maybe not all the resentment I have should be placed on the shoulders of you. It's my fault too. My idiocracy has turned into hypocrisy, and there's nothing else that you or I can do. But the words that remains in my feelings go unchanged. You play with the strings of my heart, this I will not forget you. Objectified like a marionette, you have cause me hateful feelings I can't reinstate. Well, this is sorrow that love takes. The earth strings on my heart, this I will not forget. You objectified it like a marionette. You have caused me hateful feelings I can't reinstate. Well, this is sorrow that love takes.
Welcome back to All Access Pass. We're just wrapping up for the end of this week. Make sure to tune in next Thursday at 5 o'clock because it's going to be an all-music show run by DJ Spencer, and it's going to be a really great time. Thanks for listening this week. We hope you enjoyed all the stuff we had to say about the panel series, and maybe go tweet about the fact that it's International Day of Persons with Disabilities because it's really cool and it's a big deal and everyone should know about it. Up next on CITR is Are You Aware? And hope to see you next week.